way to Hades, and I am on the way to hell. What is this to do?
Can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schneid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
I guess it's high time we got on to our lost episode of Gene Shepherd. This one from Memorial Day, May 30th, 1972, a Tuesday. Wasn't Memorial Day fixed for Mondays in those days? I don't know. But a theme frequently recited by Mr. Shepherd, playing the sousaphone, how to learn to play the sousaphone and march with said instrument. So, here it is. Lost to Gene Shepherd, not available online or anywhere else, except right here, in the dustbin of history, WBAI New York.
Thank you. official announcement. You can be calm now. You can cool it. We're all set now. Everything's all right. This is an official announcement. The chief is here. That's right. He is here. And happy Memorial Day to you. Happy Memorial Day to you. You know, there's certain holidays that that are like an old fire hoist. I feel an itch in my shoulder. Certain holidays. Now, I don't. You take Christmas. I don't feel that. You take Thanksgiving. No. But certain holidays, I feel a strong ache. It's an ache. A kind of a racial memory ache. I mean, an ache that cannot be reached by Excedrin or by Ben Gay or any of those things. It's an ache that has to do with, it's like a racial ache, a memory that is subtle and has nothing to do with nostalgia. As a matter of fact, I'm always worried about people who are involved in nostalgia. It's a sad crew. That nostalgia has very little to do with memory. It really doesn't. It has a lot to do with fantasy. Very little to do with memory. And what I have in that shoulder, you know, in those days, right now I can feel it. I can feel it. It's my left shoulder aches. It's a bad ache deep down. It's the ache that any retired sousaphone player feels on certain holidays where his sousaphone would begin to weigh thousands of pounds. You know, it's a funny thing about playing certain instruments and about being involved in certain what appears to be harmless activities, that it is a fact that genetically, and I have consulted several experts in the field, that genetically I was born to be from 8 to 13 inches taller than I am right now. And you know what happened to me? At a very crucial age in the developmental process of growing up, you know, I'm talking about physically growing up, not mentally, physically growing up, I took up the playing of the sousaphone. And it's just like the Chinese binding of the feet. You know what happens when you bind the foot? Like the Chinese used to bind the feet, a woman or a person grows up, I guess it was women that did that, and they would grow up, they had this little foot, you know, it was about an inch and a half long, you know, the tiny foot. You heard about that, didn't you? Well, that's what, in effect, the process that was occurring and has occurred to many sousaphone players who took it up before they realized the danger inherent in playing a sousaphone. I took up the sousaphone when I was in seventh grade. All right, how old are you when you're in seventh grade? Figure it out. What is it? How old are you? Seventh grade. I mean, you know, a guy that's normally progressed from first grade to seventh grade. How old is he? Right. That's right. 11. Now, at what point does the human being begin to, as they say, sprout up? That's about the period, right? 11 through about 16, right? Well, what if you're carrying a 742-pound double B-flat con sousaphone on your left shoulder throughout that sprouting up period? That's right. Oh, yes, there are times. In fact, just late last night, was just before it was, the Memorial Day was dawning, like coming up like thunder over China, across the bay. Actually, it was coming up like thunder over Staten Island, across the bay. It was, it was coming up like thunder. I'm lying there in a sack, and I could see up on a ceiling. I could see these long lines of marching bandsmen, and I could hear subtly playing deep way down, now, subtly way down. I could hear the sound. Yeah, it's just fine. That's just right. That's just about the way a subtle memory would be. Right. I began to play the double B flat sousaphone part to El Capitan. I'm playing the sousaphone part, in case you heard. Boom, Listen to the sousaphone. Hear that? Bring it up big. Come on, keep it up there. Listen to those sousaphones. Oh, what a beautiful sound. Yeah, this is the coda. Oh, I can see those notes marching across that tiny fluttering piece of paper. And I can feel that ache in the left shoulder. Isn't that great? You gotta admit, I know the part. And ahead of me, I could still hear the shuffling sound of Roger Bean Blossom. Listen to this now. Come on, bring it up big. There you go. I can hear. Thank you. Oh, man. You know, I'll tell you, this type of trauma, and it has to be that. That is the only way you can define it, is a trauma that occurs when you get involved in something that, for one thing, I think all of us owe it to ourselves to be involved in something that's far bigger than we are. In other words, something that you can't fight. And it is a fact that when you start playing a sousaphone, you very quickly realize that the sousaphone literally plays you often. I'm serious about it. And you learn a lot about human nature. I don't think that any instrument subjects its player to more indignity, to more lack of appreciation than the sousaphone. In fact, it used to bother. Of course, I got very used to that. After a while, you get used to these things as scars heal. You know, that's one good thing about man. Man is adaptable. And furthermore, man tends to adapt, particularly will he adapt himself to rotten situations. You've seen this many times. I mean, how else can you get guys to fight a war? They adapt, you know. Pretty soon, you know, they just think throwing hand grenades around is normal. You know, they do it. That's just one of the secrets of man. here I was, 11 years old, I'm learning to play the sousaphone. And at first I was sensitive about it because, you know, I'd go to parties and I'd go to other, you know, little functions type things. And certain kids would be pointed out with pride and would be applauded because they could play the piano. Sit down at the piano and play the piano. Other kids would get up and play the accordion. We had a whole rash of accordion players in our neighborhood. And at that point, very early in my life, I formed a terrible, terrible disdain for the accordion. Even now, when I just think of accordions, I get that, accordions. Maybe that's what I can't stand about Lawrence Welk. But to me, I've always said that a man who hates an accordion has to be good. Because that's one of the great tests of human nature. But we had a whole raft of accordion. But Schwartz played the accordion. And, they'd sit around, all these smug little kids with their $800 accordions with their names and sequins on the side of it and the pearls and all that stuff, all of them, you know. They had all kinds of diamonds and stuff, and they'd play Red Sails and the Sunset and other classical favorites. And unforgettable pieces of music like My Body Lies Over the Ocean. $600 accordion playing, that's enough to make you sick. So I was, amid all these people taking these various lessons and getting social approval for it, I was studying the sousaphone. Never once was I asked to play my sousaphone at anybody's birthday party. I have never, ever known a sousaphone player who's ever asked to perform. I mean, you come to this party. I'll just tell you how hopeful I was at one time. I used to go to parties, and I would take my sousaphone in the trunk of the car, expecting somebody to ask me to play it. Of course, I said, I just have it around here. Luckily, I have my sousaphone in the car. You know, entertained with selections from Cole Porter. on the B-flat, double B-flat sousaphone. I could actually entertain them, though, because I was known particularly good on the coda of Semper Fidelis. I was beautiful on that. And, by the way, one of the most difficult codas in all the March catalog. And I was never once called upon. In fact, there was the only one time that I did play a sousaphone solo, which, I might as well be honest with you. You're listening to a man who at one time won a state championship as a sousaphone player. Did you know that the various instruments have state championship competitions? Well, one day I was sitting in the band, working away there with the rest of the band, and I had been particularly assiduously attacking. See what happens when you begin to realize that you are the subject of social derision. Quite often the person who is laughed at for his pursuit pursues that pursuit then out of a curious masochism. He pursues it with even more dedication. Now, I don't know why this is so. Have you noticed this in your life? That you've seen people who, when for example, they become food cuckoos. Certain food cuckoos who will only eat seeds grown in the shade of a certain type of cactus in Mexico under certain organic conditions. When they are laughed at, will proceed to do it with even more vengeance, right? Till their liver disappears, but they will do it. Now, I had been laughed at several times by my sousaphone, so I began to devote myself to the sousaphone. And I remember long hours that I would spend in the band room. We used to have 2 or 3 hours, you know, when you're a band member, you'd have a band rehearsal, band practice, which you get credit for. And then as a study hall, you could elect to either spend it reading about the War of the Roses, or you could spend it in the band room practicing your instrument. And so I would sit in solitary monastic dedication in the bathroom working with my B-flat sousaphone. The beautiful sousaphone. We each had our own. You see, that's something you got to remember, that I was assigned my sousaphone right at the very beginning of my high school career. I kept that same sousaphone for all 7 years that I was in high school. It was assigned to me. This is WOR New York. It was assigned to me right at the beginning of my high school career. And I used to polish the bell. And I had this brass polish, this chrome polish, metal polish. You know, I used to have my own little canisters of valve oil. If you ever, you know what valve oil is? It's the stuff you put in the valve. See, and I used to carefully put in new the little felt pads in the valves. Now the B flat sousaphone, the double B flat. I must point out it's a double B flat. It's not a B flat. It's a double B flat sousaphone. Has four valves. There is a three-valve type, but the one I had was the four-valve type, which meant you had four valves, one for each finger, and your thumb would go into this ring. It's a big metal ring that would support your thumb. Well, now, this this ring, one of the worst things, are you aware that there are certain, of course you must be aware, that every profession has its own professional ailments, has its own problems that are part. In other words, professional problems that develop. For example, if you work in a paint factory, what do you get? I mean, you wind up with some lung trouble, right? This is a problem that you get from breathing in paint. Well, do you know what some of the ailments that are particularly and peculiarly that are part of the sousaphone player's world? One, you get what they call a distinct shoulder droop. That is obviously the result of carrying a horn on your left shoulder, and your right shoulder, of course, is comparatively unfettered. So what happens is that most sousaphone players grow up sideways, and you'll find many a sousaphone player that looks like he's continually leaning into the wind. Well, this is because he began to play the sousaphone at a very early age, and his left shoulder was forced into a very unnatural situation where a heavy weight was constantly on the left shoulder. The right shoulder just continued to grow. So you'll notice that often I've been pointed out, people have said that Shepard, I saw a review of a show I did at Princeton. It said, Shepard came out on a stage like he was bucking a high wind. Did you read that, Jerry? Well, that was just a typical sousaphone player's stance. Any sousaphone player immediately recognized what it was. Now, the high wind premise is also very important. Now, a sousaphone is one of the very few instruments that is subjected to great, great weather problems. For example, very few piano players ever have to play their piano in a typhoon. Very few piano players ever have to march down the street playing their piano at, say, the temperature 5 below 0, right? Okay. But a sousaphone player, he has to do this. Now, a trombone player also has to do this, too. But you'll notice that the area of the trombone, this little small bell sticking out in front there, has just a couple little pipes there, is not really affected much by wind. But you get out with a sousaphone, and you march for 22 miles down a street, under the streetcar wires, among all the beer cans of life, to the roar of the crowd around you, against a 25 to a 40-mile-an-hour gale, you will begin to develop enormous calves, which come from pushing, literally pushing your instrument through a great sea of turbulent air. In addition to that, if you're young enough when you begin to play the horn, as I was, you begin to develop a curious, what they call a sousaphone spine. Have you noticed, Jerry, also, that I appear to bend forward at the waist, continually moving into the wind the way a Pontiac radiator ornament is always leaning into the wind? You notice this? Well, this comes from the fact that through various very, very dangerous and emotional periods in my life, when we are marching past the reviewing stand, for example, in a spanking 35-mile-an-hour gale, we had to move forward in unison. Every last one of us in the sousaphone section all had that same leaning forward. In fact, almost all of us went on to become very prominent linemen in the various football teams because we had the stance right from the start. And we had enormous shoulder development from pushing that that baby through that wind. Now, do you want to know about some of the other ailments that befall sousaphone players? There is also what they call the thumb rash, which comes from the sousaphone, that ring that you hold your thumb into as you play. That ring is generally composed of a type of brass, which has been coated with silver or nickel. And the inside of the ring has worn off. Generations of sousaphone players have played your instrument, and the brass begins to affect your thumb. I can remember a giant rash that spread all over my thumb and all the way up into my wrist. And I used to play that sousaphone. I'd have a cloth. That's why Louis Armstrong always wore that cloth when he played. Did you know that? Because of that rash. And I tell you, some guys get it and others don't, see? But I was one of them that got it. And I can remember, you know, sitting there, if they had given Purple Hearts to band men, you know, for injuries sustained in action, that I would have had at least 5 or 6 bronze palms on my Purple Heart. Because, no, I was out of school once for over 10 days with the thumb rash. I had a fantastic rash, and it was all over. And it all came about because of my horn. Well, that's part of it. Now, you want to hear another one. I mean, if we're talking about the problems of sousaphone players. And the only reason I'm bringing this up, you know, after all, Memorial Day was one of the major days for the band. For the marching band that I worked in. All marching bands are called out on Memorial Day. And ours was, of course, no exception. And, of course, this was Indiana, I point out. Now, Indiana can go from 115 degrees on Memorial Day to maybe 5 or 6 below 0 on a Memorial Day, and sometimes within the same hour. So it presented some very difficult problems when you were performing on the sousaphone. Begin with, have you ever noticed my teeth are concave? Do you notice that, Jerry? I've got concave teeth. Well, this is known as the sousaphone player's fang. And it's developed because when you're playing the sousaphone, you have this enormous mouthpiece. You know the mouthpiece, which most of you are familiar with. The sousaphone mouthpiece is roughly the size of a small apartment size plumber's helper. And it's shaped pretty much the same way. You've seen this big thing. Well, when you carry this around, see, everybody had his own mouthpiece, of course. And we used to carry it. I carry my mouthpiece around in a little, had this little chamois skin bag, and I used to carry my mouthpiece with me. Well, now, there are two types of mouthpieces. There's the purest mouthpiece, which is German silver. This is the purest. Any classical purest sousaphone player. Now may I don't know. I hope I'm not boring you with these things. I possibly am, but I don't give a damn, frankly. I mean, if you're bored, you're a person I have no use for. I mean, if the world of the sousaphone player bores you, I'm sorry, fella. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff that must bore you, too, and you obviously have problems in the gland department. But and I'm not going to argue with you about your glandular development or lack of development. I'm just going to take it for where it's, you know, where it is. But nevertheless, this mouthpiece, there's a great war that has gone on in the sousaphone players' ranks almost from the day that John Philip Sousa, you know, he invented the sousaphone. Now, for those of you who know what a sousaphone is, it's what the unwashed call the bass horn. The bass horn. Or the tuba. They constantly call it the tuba. This is not a tuba. I repeat, it is not a tuba. The tuba is an upright instrument. I play the tuba. Any sousaphone player plays the tuba. But the tuba is an upright instrument, a large metal instrument, and the bell points vaguely upwards and outwards. But it is an upright instrument, and it is played seated. So a man plays the tuba, and it's a very very awkward position. It's almost an obscene position the man assumes when he's playing the tuba. The tuba sometimes is even held on a rack, you know, and it sits there upright. It's a big gold instrument. That's the tuba. Now, the sousaphone is for purposes of marching. And Sousa got the idea, see, that the band sounded pretty good, you know, when it had these tubas in it. Now, if you can invent a tuba that could be carried, then you'd have a real great sound out there. See, they didn't have them in the beginning. So he invented a horn, which was really, in essence, a tuba that was straightened out, had this great big circular thing, round, carried on the shoulder. That is then called, and was from thenceforth on, called the sousaphone, invented by John Philip Sousa. Well, it's what made his band sound great. He actually invented this instrument. So I'm part of a very small, dedicated group of people who at one point in their lives devoted their every waking hour to mastering this very difficult, recalcitrant, almost truculent, and in fact, in some cases, even carnivorous instrument. The sousaphone is an instrument that has... It's moody. Now, I bet you didn't know that, did you? That you generally take, you know, we're so blasé about the equipment that we just sort of take equipment. We don't think about it as having its own life and spirit. But the sousaphone, any good sousaphone player would take, no two sousaphones, by the way, are alike. So the minute you take somebody else's sousaphone and start to play it, it has a curious, unnatural feeling to it. It does not feel, it's not... There's something wrong about it. It's not right. Each sousaphone is different. The feeling, the way it sits on your shoulder. Some sousaphones you never get to like at all. In fact, some sousaphones you hate instantly. They have their own personality. It just will not go. It will not give with you. It's not friendly. It'll play. Oh, yes, it'll play. It'll make the sounds. Yes. But all the while, there's a sense of almost revenge about it. It's doing it grudgingly. It's like to the uninitiated, all horses look alike, right? Oh, if you've ever ridden any horses, you know how silly that can be. Oh, by George, I'll tell you. And that's the way with sousaphones. Each one has its own personality. And often that personality reflects the personality of the player who first broke it in. And so if you have a sousaphone that is truculent, that is angry, you can be damn sure that in its early career, it was broken in by an angry, truculent, non-successful sousaphone player who hated every minute that he played the horn. On the other hand, there were loving sousaphones. There was a sousaphone that would just embrace you. You put the sousaphone on it instantly. You knew you were in the clasp of love. It just holds you. And all you had to do was, you know, put your hand down on those four valves, and you just put your mouth on that, in that mouthpiece, you know, and you... Yeah, get your embouchure ready. You know, you blow. Oh, yeah. And you just feel that warmth. And it exudes trust and confidence. And you knew that you were going to play the second coda in El Capitan like it had never been played before. Now, I'll carry this a little bit further, that some of the other occupational diseases of the sousaphone player, of course, comes from the constant pressure of this enormous mouthpiece on the lips and the teeth. In fact, they call it there is a thing in medical jargon called the sousaphone player's kiss, which is something else again. If you've ever been kissed by a sousaphone player, you've been really kissed. It's almost like a giant suction cup that works. When a sousaphone player kisses anyone, let's put it this way, it's a positive action, and it can often be dangerous. It's tremendous pressure and suction involved, and also too, there's a great misplacement of the teeth. It causes a malocclusion if one does not learn early in the game how to protect one's teeth. Now, there's other little problems you have to face. There's the gradual disillusionment. There's a sousaphone player's malaise, which has been recognized by many psychiatrists who have dealt with ex-band members. And what is that malaise caused by? The trumpet players are generally alert, live, optimistic people. And in fact, their optimism is only matched by clarinet players. Clarinet players are a strange breed, optimistic, happy people, generally. But as the instruments get larger and more complex and more malevolent, the gradual disintegration of various areas of your head begin to slowly take place until finally the two most moody of all instrumentalists, both brass players, that are recognized by all other performers as being moody, mercurial people, given to great flights of rage and fantastic moments of euphoria. What are those two instruments? The sousaphone, what's the other one? No, not the trombone. The peckhorn, the French horn, but for different reasons. The French horn creates people who are invariably insecure throughout all their lives because this is a treacherous horn. The French horn can be played absolutely perfectly correct, and it produces a total clam of a sound. In the middle of a great movement of Wagner, this thing will just suddenly apparently blow itself. I have known French horn players. Every peckhorn player I've ever known is suicidal. I mean, even the best, the better he gets, the more suicidal he gets, because the instrument becomes more treacherous. When you're an inept player, you can always blame the clams that it makes, the bad notes, and the real duds that it blows on your own ineptitude. But when you're recognized as one of the great peckhorn players of the world, and then you lay an egg right in the middle of a dramatic moment at Lincoln Center, what do you do then? That's right. You become moody, introspective. You tend to look long and hard at knives when they're presented. Oh, yeah. I know one peckhorn player. They won't let near any kind of sharp object at all. And he's a famous player. In fact, a classic example of the moody, introspective, insecure peckhorn player is Milt Kamen. Milt, you know, was a great French horn player in his day. Did you know that? Oh, he played under Stokowski and Toscanini. Yeah, he's a great ex-peckhorn player. But it's affected him for all of his life. He's very insecure. Oh, very. And so I share that. A sousaphone player tends to have that same problem, too. But for various reasons that we will not go into at this time. For example, sousaphone player often has physical attacks on him by his own instrument. And in addition to that, as you march down the street, give me a little of that Semper Fidelis. Give me a little of the El Capitan, please. This is the sound off. See, they're getting the beat. Huh? Now you're moving smart and high, and out in front, your drum major, his back is arched, and you can see the glittering snap and flash of those twin batons as they fly into that blue sky. And ahead of you, Roger Beanblossom is working away over his trombone. Next to me, Ernie Dunkel is playing his sousaphone. Next to him, I'll tell you, each sousaphone player I remember each one. Each sousaphone player that played with me in that ill-fated sousaphone section as we march forward, ripping off El Capitan. Here it is, sousaphone. Oh, beautiful. Don't they just keep it up there? You mean that's on the tape? I'll be damned. That's the sousaphone's lot. Listen to that. Now, at this point, Right there. See, they're hitting the Dakota. Now they're marching forward. This is the bright, brilliant scherzo movement. At that point, as you begin to work your way over the streetcar tracks and past the intersections, the crowds are cheering. It's Memorial Day. The flags are flying ahead. The mayor is up on the bandstand up there, ready to review. Here's the little sousaphones. You are aware always. Curious, almost ecstatic. Boom, boom, boom. Did you hear that beautiful attack? Boom, boom, boom. That was a whole section. Listen to this. Ah, magnificent. There they go, marching off. By the end of the march, this is why many sousaphone players develop a curious... Have you wondered why I have a jaundiced view of my fellow man? Have you wondered about this? Yes. Let's face it. I'm not Freddy, the friendly Bobsy twin. Oh no. There's a certain irascible, sardonic quality to me, and I say it stems back to my realization of what life is about after my years as a sousaphone player. I mean, here you are. You're out on a holiday. Memorial Day. You're marching under the sun. And it's a national holiday, right? It's supposed to be a day of celebration, a day of oneness, a day of unity. And I'm marching in the sousaphone section. And ahead of me, the trombone section is blaring out. And ahead of them, the trumpet section. Ahead of them, the clarinets. And we always were in the last row, marching along. And I was, I was number one chair in the sousaphone section. I was number one on the left, the pole position in the sousaphone section, right on the end. And the band would march, great vertical and horizontal, lateral rows on either side of me. And as you see those instruments moving up and down, you can feel the waves of percussion roaring through you. And right in the middle of it, our drum section would boom out. Let's hear that drum section. Listen to that section. Listen to that section work. Play in a band. You're part of a giant machine. You experience it. Boom. 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 Great roaring waves of sound. Like sailing on a ship in a turbulent sea. Enormous waves. Great swells and reefs crashing all around you. Boom. A controlled explosion. Hear that? It just roars through your very being. All right, this is supposed to be a day of celebration, of joy. Well, I would begin to get the sense that my sousaphone is getting heavier and heavier as we marched, mile after mile. And I was right. And all six of us in the sousaphone section were having the same problem. And why? Well, at the end of the march, I would take my sousaphone down in the band room. And this was the saddest moment of all. After we have celebrated, after we've entertained the multitude, after we have played El Capitan with machine-like precision. For what? I'll tell you for what. Obscenities. That's for what. I would turn my horn upside down and all the stuff would fall out that all the various wits would have hurled into it. Do you know that one of the great occupational ailments, one of the great occupational dangers of the sousaphone player's life is the stuff that people throw in the horn when you go by. And I just want to tell you, at the age of 11, when I marched in my first Memorial Day parade, was when I began to realize just how rotten my fellow man was. How rotten he was. The stuff that was thrown into my sousaphone. I mean, at the time, I didn't even know what half the stuff was. I soon found out. And you know, old hard-bitten sousaphone players, you know, been playing for years before you come into the section. They've all got that same sardonic humor about them. It's the humor of a guy that's seen too much of life. It's the humor of a guy who's bucked too many 45-mile-an-hour crosswinds. It's the humor of a guy who's felt the bite of the sousaphone mouthpiece too deeply into his lips, who has felt the crawling, the itching, burning crawl of that evil sousaphone player's rash crawl up inside his wrist. And he's felt the tinkle of beer caps as they come piling down into his horn, beer bottles, Coca-Cola cans, God knows what else, things which I can't even mention on a family radio station. And what does he do? He does the only thing the sousaphone player can't do. It's like climbers of Mount Everest. He just keeps climbing. He plays that sousaphone because it's there, that's all. He is going to get no applause from the crowd. He is not going to be hailed. He's not going to win any Academy Awards. He's not going to play at Carnegie Hall. He's not going to perform before the Bolshoi Ballet. Oh, no. A sousaphone player is an unsung soldier in the arena of culture. Unsung, unloved, dedicated. He hurls his frail body into the Chinese wall of existence. Ah, the blood of sousaphone players has made the mortar of time. Yes, in shadow, ghostly bands march across the landscape on Memorial Day, celebrating curious past moments of history that none of them remember, that none of them care about. As they move forward, roaring out, booming out El Capitan. There, thank you. Let me have some more of those bugles, please, if you will. Let's hear the bugles. All right. In the plug goes. There goes the switch. Well, the YouTube players, if you're looking for tires, look no further than the big red General Tire G. From sports cars to sedans, compacts to king-size cars, General Tire makes the tires you need. That at prices you can afford. Radial tires, glass-belted new car tires, puncture-sealing tires, all belted for mileage and strength, white wall and black wall design. Some even have sporty raised white letters. And you can charge it on General's Auto Charge, Master Charge, or Bank America card. That's at General Tire, where the big red G has stood for quality for over 56 years. Oh, beautiful. Let's see, we have Newsday. Hit the button.
Hey, Dad, can I have the sports section?
Sure, here it is.
Oh, nuts.
What's the matter?
They don't have the final score of the Mets game.
Frustrating, isn't it? Believe me, I know. I'm Marty O'Shea, sports news editor of Newsday. Until recently, fans on Long Island frequently didn't get the final scores of Saturday night games in the New York Sunday papers. But now Long Island has its own Sunday paper, Sunday Newsday. Newsday isn't trucked out from the city. That means we can give you the latest sports news available on the island. We've doubled the size of the Sunday sports section, so you'll get more news. And since we don't have to cover Westchester, Connecticut, and New Jersey, you'll get more news about Long Island school sports. So keep up with the Mets and Jets and Nets in Sunday Newsday. We can't guarantee you'll like the final score, but at least you'll know it. Sunday Newsday. We're glad you like it.
You know, I just when that spot was on, it just suddenly hit me how all those teams sound exactly. The Nets, the Mets, and the Jets. I don't know. Yes. Important announcement. A winner. We are announcing the winner of our Impossible Rotten Equation division. And the winner is David Warren of Lake Hiawatha, New Jersey. Well, anybody who lives in Lake Hiawatha, I mean, he deserved to win something once in his life. So he submitted the winning equation. And we'll send him a copy of our record, a declassified Gene Shepherd, and other condolences. So if you'll please bring up the horn there. Oh, yes. You know, I just wonder how many people listening to this thought that this was all fiction about sousaphone. You know, if anything was understated. That's right. Did I ever tell you about the time when the entire band, you know, you've seen these peel-off maneuvers when the band runs in a long single line? When we were running through the rain in a single line, the band was charging up the stands at a track meet or something. We were running up the stands when all of a sudden, the number one sousaphone, I was the last sousaphone player in line, and the number six one, which was five places ahead of me, suddenly stumbled and fell, and all six sousaphone players crashed in an enormous clanging, fender-bending, tooth-crunching crash. And six sousaphone players rolled down four sections of a grandstand, tangled up and cut over $12,000 in damage. Quit laughing. Not to mention psychological. Brack, this is WR New York. You stay tuned for Lester Smith on the news.
Well, that was Gene Shepherd Memorial Day, May 30th, 1972. It was a Tuesday. When did they make Memorial Days on Mondays? I don't know. We'll ponder it at some other time. Jimmy Dore coming up shortly. Thanks for listening. We'll be back to the Weird Circle next week, possibly beginning Inner Sanctum as a weekly feature. Tune in then and see, or check the Facebook page. Facebook.com/MaxGoldenAge or The Dust Benefactory. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to write to me, max@wbai.org, and I'll be back Sunday night, 8 to 10, with the Golden Age of Radio.
Finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal.